This is The Big Lead.
We are coming to you from the Carter Silvero studio. Welcome. Welcome to the big show. It's a little weak. We got, no, I don't mean W-E-A-K. I mean, it's a short week, W-E-E-K. The show is not weak today, but yesterday being that holiday and all, I got to cram 5 days of entertainment into just 4 days worth of shows. So you just watch our smoke today. Got a bunch of exclusives for you that you're not going to hear anywhere else. And man, I tell you, it's another example. It's one of those days when you think that things can't possibly get any crazier around here. They somehow do. Just day after day after day. Let's get right to The Big Lead.
The Big Lead, Dory Monson Show exclusive.
Over the weekend, I got a tip about a property owner who owns a lot of rental properties in the Seattle area. And as you know, there is an eviction moratorium right now in the state. And supposedly to help people who are down on their luck. But some cases, that is true. Many cases, it is just deadbeats who are scamming people out of money that is owed them. And I find it absolutely unconstitutional because the government is not supposed to be allowed to take our private property without compensation. And so when Jay Inslee and Joe Biden, when they mandate that property owners give up their property and let people stay rent-free, well, that is a violation of the U.S. Constitution. Why this has been allowed to go on is absolutely beyond me. But so, let me tell you what's going on down in the Rainier Valley. There's a guy, I talked to him over the weekend. His name is Carl Haglin. Seems like a good guy. He likes to rent decent places, and he tries to keep the prices down because he knows a lot of people can't afford a lot of rent right now. But there are some people who can't afford it, and they don't pay anyway. So let me tell you this one story. At this one apartment of his, the guy works every single day. So he's collecting a paycheck, but he has just chosen for 17 months to not pay his rent. But oh, there's more to that. I wouldn't be leading the show if this was just another one of a million deadbeat renter stories. Now, the guy also has a dog that poops all over the apartment inside. And the guy does absolutely nothing to clean it up. And so he shot video of the floor of the apartment building that he owns that he would love to keep in rentable condition. And he shot the video, and every square foot of the floor in this apartment building is covered with dog poop. And it gets even better than that. I feel like Ron Popeil here. But wait, there's more. Once the eviction moratorium is lifted, this property owner is not going to be able to kick the guy out still. And you know why? Because the renter is a hoarder. And what he hoards is dog poop. I am not making this up. And in the city of Seattle, if you are a hoarder, that is considered a mental illness, and you are in a protected class. And so we've got a guy who right now is scamming the eviction moratorium. And then after that, he's given every indication that he's going to claim mental illness in a protected class. He is a hoarder who hoards dog poop. And Carl Haglin, he described the apartment that he owns that's full of crap.
Guys, Carl Haglin here for the Admiral Apartments. I wanted to show you this disgusting mess. This is a building where we worked very hard to provide good quality workforce housing for people to raise families in, and we have this mess. That's all dog everywhere. It is dog everywhere on the floor.
It is everywhere. I mean, it just covers this apartment. And the guy does have some money because he's got a couple of things he likes to splurge on.
The place smells like he's smoking meth. You see all these boxes here? The guy is really spending his money on rent. He's buying sports tennis shoes. No rent, 16 months. Dog everywhere. Spend his rent money on upscale yuppie dog food.
Yeah, the dog eats the finest food, and the owner of the dog apparently does collect very expensive basketball shoes because he's got boxes and boxes and boxes of basketball shoes. And so Carl Hagelin can't do anything about it. And so to help spread the word on how insane our policies in this city are, I've invited Carl Hagelin to come on with us. So right after the 12:30 news, he and I will talk about this insane situation. Why would anybody want to be a landlord in the city of Seattle? And if you are, if you're a property owner in Seattle, it's not a rhetorical question. Why do you want to do that? Why do you do that? Why do you put up with all of this poop that gets shoveled on you every single day? They hate you because you're a property owner. They can't stand people who have achieved any level of capitalistic success. And so they want to just crush you as quickly and as efficiently as possible. So why do you put up with this as a property owner in Seattle? I would love to hear your thoughts on that. You can text me at 98973. That's 98973. And let me know, if you are a property owner, how much longer you can put up with this. But if you want to hear his story, and I really want to hear more of his story. I did talk to him this weekend, and I'm looking forward to having a conversation with you listening in, because it's just another example of how our city is going down the toilet. Talk to him right after the news at the bottom of the hour here. Up next in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Top story.
Jay Inslee, over the weekend, he just sounded like a delusional man. He talked to our friend Brandy Cruz at Q13 News. And one of the things that they talked about is, when is he going to lift the emergency order that he has all of us under, which grants him rather unprecedented powers? And I say rather unprecedented because, yes, you can get emergency orders, but it has always been thought that the only time a governor, a politician, would use emergency powers is for a, well, emergency. And nobody thought that an emergency would go on for 17 months. But that's what is happening. 17 months and counting. Emergency powers were supposed to be conveyed upon, provided for politicians, for governors, for mayors, for county execs, if there is an emergency, an urgent emergency, as Foreigner would say. And so Jay Inslee, he hasn't made this a temporary thing. And I've talked about this an awful lot, that he loves the power. He loves having a unprecedented level of control over our lives. I think he enjoyed watching people walk around with masks for a year and a half. I think that he liked going on MSNBC and CNN and talking about what a great job he's done. But you want an idea of how delusional this guy is? I thought that what they did over the weekend was, and they were doing it while I was on the air Thursday, because I took Friday off. But Jay Inslee went to the Space Needle and got up on the roof. I mean, he has such superpowers now. I thought he was going to try to fly off the roof of the Space Needle. But no, he just went up there to hoist a flag. And so he lifted a flag and he went to places in Tacoma and he unfurled banners talking about what a great job he's done for our state. He went to the Pike Place Market and caught a fish. Ooh, that was original. I wonder who came up with that brainstorm. So he went and caught a fish. And meanwhile, as he's doing all of these photo ops, I was thinking, there seems to be a little more solemnity to this moment than what Jay Inslee is doing here. Because we have had 6,000 people in our state die. There are an awful lot of people who have lost loved ones to this dreaded disease. And yet Jay Inslee turned this into a celebration of Jay Inslee. But I want you to listen to what he said to Brandi Cruz at Q13, because she was saying, don't you think you should rethink these emergency powers now?
We have had such tremendous success in our state relative to other states. I don't see a reason for that. The calls we have made have been very difficult, but they have succeeded. I'm not sure you want to go back and reform when you won the Super Bowl. And we've won the Super Bowl of the COVID pandemic.
Wow.
And the reason is we have saved tens of thousands of lives. The decisions we have made, the decisions of business owners and families, means that tens of thousands of people are alive today.
Where does he get that number? We have saved tens of thousands of lives, he tells us. That is an absolutely made-up number. In the most horrible run of COVID, we didn't have a vaccine. All they were doing was the masking, wash your hands, and we lost 6,000 people. When he says tens of thousands of lives have been saved by Jay Inslee, that man is delusional. There is not one statistical model anywhere from any scientist that would suggest that Jay Inslee did things that saved 20,000 or more lives in our state. But this is what's going on in his head right now. I mean, this is one of the all-time, in an industry that is absolutely filled with ego, the most narcissistic of all pursuits is politics. And Jay Inslee is actually saying that he has saved more than 20,000 lives in our state with the actions he's taken, which, by the way, were actions taken by all 49 other governors in the United States of America. He didn't do anything extraordinary, and he certainly has no reason to believe that he's saved more than 20,000 lives. Okay, I'm going to go back to the beginning of this cut because I want you to hear it in a little more context, but I wanted to make sure that you heard when he says tens of thousands, that means 20,000 or more, but let's listen to the whole thing now.
Excuse me?
Sure. Here we go, Jay.
We have had such tremendous success in our state.
Hey, Andrew, is that boosted enough? Sounds kind of quiet in my ear.
I'll give it a... Sorry, I'm talking to an engineer. Go ahead, try it again.
Jack Jay up a little bit more for me here.
...other states, I don't see a reason for that. The calls we have made have been very difficult, but they have succeeded. I'm not sure you want to go back and reform when you won the Super Bowl. And we've won the Super Bowl of the COVID pandemic. And the reason is we have saved tens of thousands of lives. The decisions we have made, the decisions of business owners and families, means that tens of thousands of people are alive today. I'm not sure I want to reform a system that won the Super Bowl. So I don't see a reason for that today. But listen, we're always open to ideas. And I'm sure there will be things we learn as we look back at the science of this. And I'm willing to obviously learn.
Wow. We've won the Super Bowl. How would you feel? How do you feel if you're a business owner and you've seen maybe years of blood, sweat, and toil just evaporate, vaporize because of the business shutdown? What about all of the employees who lost their jobs and they started off by using all their savings so they could feed their family, and then they had to start borrowing against their credit card at 19% interest. Thank you, Joe Biden, for giving credit card companies a safe haven in Delaware to charge usurious interest rates. And Jay Inslee is crowing about having won the Super Bowl. It's amazing. But this has been a theme that he's been using a lot lately.
We will not allow the virus to win the Super Bowl. We ought to win the Super Bowl, which means to keep people from being infected.
So that was a few months ago, right around the time of the Super Bowl, and he was so thrilled with that analogy, with that metaphor, that he decided to carry it through to this bizarre celebration over the weekend that he got the state open. But I'm telling you right now, and I say this with 100% certainty, there is not one model that suggests that Jay Inslee did anything to save 20,000 or more lives in our state. Our mitigation efforts were not any different from other states. Wash your hands, wear gloves, wear a mask. That was it. All 50 states did it. But Jay Inslee is taking credit, and now all of a sudden he's Bill Belichick. He's Vince Lombardi leading the way on the frozen tundra of Jay Inslee's mind. And that is your big lead for today.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
One Super Bowl. That's amazing. All right, we're going to check the news for you here, and then we're going to talk to a property owner who cannot evict his tenant because of the moratorium. But even if there was no moratorium, he can't evict his tenant because the tenant has a dog that poops all over the apartment and the guy collects the poop. He's a hoarder, and hoarders are a protected class in Seattle. It's an unbelievable story, and you'll hear it exclusively next here on the Dory Monson Show. Well, as I have told you, as the government is insisting on these eviction moratoriums, I consider it to be an absolute unconstitutional taking of private property of individuals. The landlords are not getting compensated. They still have to pay mortgages and rent and property taxes and all of that. And all of that's with no recompense. One of those property owners, landlord Carl Haglund, he sent me quite a shocking video. Here's just a little bit of a clip of what he encountered in one of his units.
Guys, Carl Haglund here with the Admiral Apartments. I wanted to show you this disgusting mess. This is a building where we worked very hard to provide good quality workforce housing for people to raise families in it. We have this mess. That's all dog everywhere. It is dog everywhere on the floor.
So you have an apartment that is absolutely filled with dog feces. Carl Haglund joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. Carl, good to talk to you this afternoon.
Good morning, Dory. Hi.
So we need to paint a little more of a picture here. So tell me exactly what you saw, smelled, encountered as you went into one of your units.
Well, Dory, at this particular building, we're replacing it. The 23-unit apartment building at south end of the Rainier Valley. And one of my carpenters was in the process of replacing every single one of the 50-year-old entrance doors to each apartment. And he went into one apartment, started replacing the door, and then he called me, told me I should see this. And I went over there, and it's an apartment that's just full of dog crap.
Yeah.
I mean, just dog crap everywhere. And then on top of that, in the living room, he's a hoarder. I mean, he's got dozens and dozens and dozens of boxes of what had been tennis shoes.
Okay.
And I immediately did a video. And the most bizarre part is most of the dog crap is in one of the bedrooms in the back, and then in the hallway, yeah, outside the hallway, he's feeding the dog with yuppie organic dog food. But the most bizarre part is he has a small fan in the back bedroom, and that's venting the smell. So, yeah. And he's living in one of the bedrooms, the other bedroom, which we didn't go into. And then his living room was full of sports shoes. And this is a guy who hasn't paid rent for 17 months. He owes, you know, over $25,000 in rent. He lets his dog crap in one of the back bedrooms.
Let me share with my listeners. Here is one other clip of your walkthrough from that apartment.
The place smells like he's smoking meth. You see all these boxes here? The guy is really spending his money on rent. He's buying sports tennis shoes. No rent, 16 months. Dog everywhere. Spend his rent money on upscale yuppie dog food.
Okay, so this guy cannot afford to pay rent, but he can afford the finest dog food available, huh?
No, he can't afford to pay rent. He goes to work every day. Yeah.
He can afford it.
He is seen by the tenants going to work every day. Yeah. He has a job. He simply decided. What happened was before the pandemic started and this moratorium on collecting rent from tenants, he was behind on his rents. He was a difficult tenant. We worked out a repayment plan, and we actually had to file an eviction, but then we worked out a repayment plan, and we allowed him to continue on. And then the pandemic started, and he decided, well, I'm not going to pay rent anymore. So he's not paying rent. He's still going to work. He's got his dog crap in his apartment. He's spending his rent on dog food, and expensive tennis shoes. He probably has a huge collection of wonderful tennis shoes, and we can't evict him. Here's the most bizarre part about this is you got dog crap everywhere, and I've got very smart attorneys who work for me, and I say I have no problem stepping up and protecting the other tenants in the building from this kind of disruptive behavior, and I have no problem stepping up to protect my building from people who are destroying it. But my attorneys have gone over and said that we cannot evict this person. Under the moratorium right now, unless somebody is an imminent threat, meaning if somebody's got a knife and they want to stab me, or if, you know, somebody is like they've got a broken sewer line in their apartment and the sewage is flooding into apartments downstairs, aside from that, we can't evict him. And for this person, he's simply chosen to, you know, have his apartment filled up with dog crap. That's his deal. It looks like he's drying it out. I mean, who knows? You know, I mean, the other part too, which is bizarre, he is a hoarder, and that is a protected class in Seattle now. So he's a hoarder.
Wait a second. You have to be kidding me. They've added hoarders to the list of protected classes?
Hoarding is considered a mental illness by the city of Seattle. And as a result, they are a protected class. Yes. Yes.
That's unbelievable.
So you've got the, you know, the living room is where the hoarding is, and you know, in the kitchen he's got all kinds of empty pizza boxes and as I said, boxes in the living room and junk everywhere. He's a protected class. And then in terms of dog crap, it's not impacting any of the other tenants. It's not like dog crap is rolling into the apartment down below or dog pee is seeping downstairs. He's keeping it fairly well contained, you know, in kind of like the back half of the apartment. He's got his little fan that kind of vents the smell, so it isn't that bad for him. And I, who knows, maybe if I asked him, I had a conversation with him, he'd probably say, well, I got a hobby. I'm just composting, you know, valuable materials that can be used by organic gardeners in Seattle. Right. I mean, who knows how he's thinking. Sure. But we cannot evict him. We cannot collect rent. There's nothing we can do in this crazy city of Seattle to change that situation currently.
You have talked to him one-on-one?
No, I haven't. My property manager has. Okay. And he's, you know, he's evasive. He does not want to have a conversation. I mean, he's just, like I say, he is who he is, and he's going to continue to do what he's doing. And that's it. And then when we evict him, he's probably going to find a friend who has good credit, probably live with his friend for 2 or 3 years in the city of Seattle. We can't ask him to leave, because if we rent to one person, he can have any roommates in his apartment. Hmm. And then in 3 years or so after this eviction, because there will be an eviction, after this eviction, you know, 3 years from now, a property owner will lease to him, because generally it takes about 3 years to season an eviction, and then the process starts over again. But here's the most bizarre part about this story is,
as if it can get more bizarre, but okay, try.
No, it gets even more bizarre. Here's the other odd part is, there is currently an incentive for us to leave him in the apartment. That's the other part that is so odd. There is an incentive for us to leave him in the apartment, because ultimately, the government has no choice. They're going to pay almost 100% of all the back rent out there across the nation. There's about $52 billion in back rent that's owed. Currently, the federal government has funded $49 billion to try to bring people current. Mm-hmm. And this guy owes so much money that all we have to do is wait, and then we'll be contacted by a nonprofit who's distributing the funds, and they'll say, well, how much does he owe? We'll send you a full check, and then we'll pay for so many months going forward.
Well, what does this guy do for a living? You said he works every day.
I noticed there's like a pay stub or whatever in the kitchen that I was looking at. And it looks like he's a security guard. And then I noticed there was a holster and a pair of handcuffs, I noticed. So it looks like he's, you know, he's got a job where he's going out and providing security someplace.
As you sit there, pay whatever bills you have on this apartment every month, I mean, you have to be seething at the situation you're in.
Zero. I'm used to it. I mean, here's the sad part about it, Dory, is I started off, again, you know, I was like, you know, my parents were, you know, typical middle class. I grew up in working class Everett where nobody really had any money. You know, mom stayed at home. There are lots of big families. And a big weekend for us with the family was dad would bring home a bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken. And then periodically he changes oil and change brakes on his car. And that's what everybody did in my neighborhood, okay? But so I'm used to a hard life. I'm used to working really hard. You know, I'm used to enduring crappy jobs and things not going my way and eventually things work out. That's how it is with my business. And also because I didn't have a lot of money and I was ambitious with real estate, the only place I could buy buildings, larger properties, and this was beginning in the very, very early 90s, late 80s, was the Rainier Valley. So I was used to hardship. I was used to crime. I was used to challenging tenants. But I endured in that challenge knowing things would work out. So this is just simply another chapter, okay? We'll endure this. Things will work out. We'll do well. There'll be property owners, housing. I like to call them housing providers, not landlords. Okay, this isn't feudal times. That's but what's right. going to happen is those people who find this uncomfortable will leave the industry. And then myself and other people like me who are comfortable with this, who are committed to a cause, who you know see this as the noble cause to stick up for a neighborhood and provide good quality workforce housing for working people, for a safe place for them to live, we will prevail because those property owners will sell, will buy more real estate, we'll get through this, and we'll still do well.
How many dogs does this guy have?
He's got one dog.
That's a lot of material from one dog because, I mean, it looked like almost every square foot of the floor was covered.
It was, but you have to remember, I mean, a dog craps two or three times a day, and it's probably gone on for, you know, a year and a half.
Yeah.
You know, probably what happened was as soon as the eviction moratorium started, again, these people are smart. The people that intentionally, you know, stiff housing providers, they're very smart people. And probably very early on thought, I'm not going to pay my rent. By the way, I'm going to do this passive aggressive mean thing to the property owner, and I'm going to chuckle every time I see the dog crap. So that's, you're looking at a year and a half of dog crap, if not before that.
Well, here's the story that I just learned. I just Googled it as we're speaking. Hoarding is considered a disability, and so people with a hoarding disorder are a protected class under the Fair Housing Act. Property owners cannot evict a tenant based on hoarding activity. It is a mental disability, they say. I mean, I had no idea this conversation was going to go in that direction, Carl. That's unbelievable.
Well, but Dory, here's why. Because you don't have housing providers on your show that actually provide, you know, good quality workforce housing for working people, men and women and families in the city of Seattle. I mean, you may have had a housing provider in the past, but they're developing Class A apartment buildings. I mean, my company is specialized in being in the trenches. And my company, we have been true community activists where we're out there fighting in the streets to protect our tenants and create an oasis for these families. So, yeah, it's news. Yeah, and it gives you an idea of just how dysfunctional these laws are in the city of Seattle for housing providers and working families and how adversarial it is. I mean, could you imagine that? This guy's a hoarder, and the Department of Housing, the city attorney, would sue us if we tried to boot him out because his apartment is a filthy mess. Could you imagine that?
I can understand. I can kind of start to wrap my brain around somebody being a hoarder and they collect old magazines. A hoarder of dog poop, that's a new one to me, Carl.
Yeah,
that's...
well, you got the dog poop and then you got the empty boxes of sports shoes and all the pizza boxes in the kitchen.
Right.
So, yeah, again, it's all new. It's all new for you, but it's old hat for me. And it's old hat for my team and my maintenance team. Yeah, it is. And I have to say, Dory, this is just one chapter of some of the most bizarre and odd things. Again, when I tell my story about what my company has had to endure and what I've had to endure personally to provide safe housing in a neighborhood where nobody cared, you'll be shocked by many of the stories. And you'll be shocked by how abusive the Department of Housing is, the city attorney is, and the Department of Housing.
Well, yeah, no, I'm used to hearing those stories. Well, Carl, let's stay in touch. I want to find out how this all comes out in the end. You get it?
Okay. Huh? Yeah. No, Dory, it's all going to work out. Hey, you know, it's all going to work out. You'll like the ending. Okay, Dory, it's been a pleasure. And thank you so much for having me on your show.
Good talking with you, Carl. All right. Carl Hagland joining us, a victim of not only a deadbeat renter, but hoarding deadbeat renter. If you want to find out more, look at CarlHaglandFoundation.com, and you can see the video up there, and I'll pop it up on my site too. CarlHaglandFoundation.com. It's a mess. All right, I'd love to know what you think about all this. You can text me at 98973. That's 98973. Lots more to come here on the Dory Monson Show. Oh, man, I'm going to have to get my woke word dice out here. Because, you know, the word of the year is everybody now thinks that they can do everything better than every human being who has preceded them. So that became a big deal with policing. All of a sudden, we have a bunch of people who hate cops, and they said, well, we will come up with a far superior way of policing communities. In fact, we'll just reimagine the whole thing.
The folks in law enforcement that share the goals of reimagining policing.
Reimagining policing in the 21st century.
Rethinking and reimagining policing.
Community efforts to reimagine policing.
To reimagine policing.
We have to reimagine what policing looks like.
Reimagining policing, reimagining our public safety.
What's so funny, every time I listen to these montages, is nobody ever uses the word reimagine, reimagining. The Imagineers at Disney, I heard about that when I was a little kid, but we're even superior to them now. We're reimagining things. But it's so funny to take a word that nobody's ever used, that nobody had really ever heard of, and then all of a sudden, everybody in the media and politics uses it.
Imagine a citizen-led approach.
You can begin to reimagine law enforcement.
Reimagine public safety in this country.
What can we do to reimagine public safety?
Reimagining public safety.
On and on it goes. Okay, well, I'm happy to tell you that we're going to reimagine some other stuff around here. King 5, they had a story about how they're going to reimagine some street designs in downtown Seattle. On Aurora Avenue, which is one of the busiest streets in all of Seattle, they're going to reimagine it, which means make it less friendly to cars. I thought I'd have a little competition. What's more important, to reimagine something or to rethink something?
Everyone uses this corridor if they live near it, on it, or just pass through it. When you think of Aurora, everyone has a different problem with it, whether it's a safety-related problem, a traffic-related problem, a biking or walking or business-oriented problem. There's 99 problems. Aurora has all of them.
Okay, Aurora's got all the problems. So what are we doing about it?
Tom Lang is a member of the Aurora Reimagined Coalition.
Oh, reimagined? Okay, we got a reimagining going on.
He says rethinking Aurora means finding
Rethinking? Okay, imagine one, rethinking one.
Balance between the traffic needs of Highway 99 and the needs of businesses and neighbors who use it.
Okay, we're tied at one. How about this?
And we're really hoping to spark a conversation and start the process of rethinking about Aurora.
Rethinking takes a 2-1 lead over reimagining.
So there's a lot of things that could happen if we look at the roadway not as this is how it always has been, always will be, but instead this is a blank slate. What if we did something different? Reimagine it.
Tied at 2, and the game ends there. So rethinking and reimagining, as of today, are your woke word dice of the day. No, wait. woke dice words of the day. There you go. All right. We're going to check the news for you here at the top of the hour. And then the Fastest 15 is coming up next as the Dory Monson Show rolls on.